Hi, Leslie.
Hi, Serge.
So your mission is to bring back dreams into therapy.
Yes, I feel like they have fallen out of favor and that it's really a loss to the profession to not be taking dreams seriously because they're such a resource.
Yeah. And so maybe we can talk a little bit about why you think that.
Well, yeah, I can say a lot about that. I started my my therapy training at Pacifica, so I was a Jungian-oriented therapist. So I've always worked with dreams, and I've practiced for more than 20 years, combining dream work and focusing, so a body-oriented way of working with dreams. And I honestly can't imagine doing my work as a therapist without those tools, particularly dreams, because they really get the conversation sort of dropped down into a level that you want to get to in therapy, but often it meanders around, or there are topics in dreams that are deeply personal that people tend to shy away from, or the things we repress come up in dreams. So dreams are like a way in, a very efficient way in to what really matters to people. And so, yeah, especially when the therapy's feeling stuck or off track, a dream is always extremely helpful at bringing the conversation into, you know, into focus and into what really is really important.
Yeah. So at the very least, dreams are a very efficient way into what really matters.
Yes. And I think the perception is the opposite, that dreams are a time-consuming way to work and they're complicated and antiquated. And that's probably because originally Freudian approaches and Jungian approaches were very complex, and it really took a lot of time and effort to learn those methods. And their types of therapy they did, the analytic therapy, was long-term therapy. So they're equating dream work with long-term therapy when really that's not, it doesn't have to be the case. I think a dream can be very profoundly impactful in just one session. So in particular, nightmare dream work is, it's really been shown to be almost immediately effective at changing people's nightmares and sometimes really dramatically reducing their symptoms. So I think it's just an understandable mistake people make, because Freud and Jung were the originators of dream work in therapy, and their methods were complicated and time-consuming. But dream work doesn't have to be.
Yeah. So we tend to associate dream with a more complicated, lengthy therapy, and you have the experience of it being very immediate and working just in the session. So do you want to maybe explain a little bit how the way you work is different from that more traditional way of working with dreams?
Yeah, it's not like it's dramatically different from, I have a Jungian background, so my dream work is kind of like the way Jung worked, but the course of therapy doesn't necessarily have to be a very long term to get the impact from dreams. I work in an experiential, embodied way. And I recently, just in the process of researching a book I wrote on it's called A Clinician's Guide to Dream Therapy. So it's aimed at basically showing practicing therapists how to incorporate dreams. And as I was researching that, what I did was I surveyed all of the current methods in use in dream work, because I didn't want to just say, here's my way of working. I wanted to see what all of the, you know, experts are doing right now with dream work to see if things had changed. And in fact, there was quite a dramatic shift from analytic interpretive methods to experiential methods that would put the client as the expert of their dream. And so dream work is really, I think people get intimidated by it because they feel like they have to have the answers and to figure a dream out. And honestly, we can't really do that, because people's dreams come from their own network of associations and their own emotional experiences. So we're not really in a position to interpret somebody's dream for them. But the way I work is, and the way that most people are working, what I discovered is we're all kind of shifted to doing the same kinds of things, which is to, in some ways, have people re-enter or re-experience their dream, to tell it as if it's happening now, and then go into the dream in various ways that are experiential. And from that, the person who's dreaming it will develop an understanding of what the dream is bringing. And it's just a conversation between them and their dream that we facilitate, not the dream worker as expert telling you what it means.
Yeah, it would be a little bit the same thing as if you were telling the client what the Rorschach blot means instead of having them, you know, project into it.
Exactly.
And what you're doing is you use the phrase facilitating the conversation between the client and their dreams.
Yes. And an embodied conversation. And that, I mean, that is particular to my way of working, a focusing oriented way of working. But what I found quite surprising and gratifying actually is that a lot of the other methods might have maybe slight differences in focus, but everybody's working experientially now with dreams, it seems, or virtually everybody. Dreams bring an experience, and that's the way to discover what they're trying to tell us. It's not a logical thing. Dreams operate in a different way, and so an embodied experience of them is actually closer to the language of the dream itself. And when a person goes back into aspects of their dream that seem really moving or really puzzling, usually there'll be at some point some kind of an aha moment or a shift or I know what this is about, and they'll feel it really impact them emotionally, physically. It will bring very often a shift that is extremely helpful and sometimes profoundly helpful. So those moments, they're like what we look for in therapy. They're really the reason someone might actually change or you know, really see something from a new perspective. And dreams are, I think, one of the best ways to bring about those kind of shifts.
Yeah. So we're talking about re-experiencing the dream, and especially in an embodied way, so that there is a sense of being able to see it and suddenly have a shift instead of just having that first impression, but being able to let it unpack and be able to receive it.
Yes. Yeah. They're usually an utter mystery to people. Well, not always. I mean, some people have a dream and go, I'm pretty sure I know what that's about. Although even there's often more than meets the eye, but sometimes they really feel important, but it's not clear what they're saying. And so there's a few ways I like to help people embody their dreams. And one of them is which everybody does, is when they're telling the dream, to tell it in the first person in present tense. So as if it's happening again, right in the moment, and walking through the dream landscape and looking around and trying to put yourself back into the dream. And what happens then is a lot of times people will remember new details about their dream. Things will come back to them that they didn't even write down in their journal, and they'll start to feel like the dream is alive and can be interacted with. And then from there, it really depends on what the dream is about and what might be compelling in the dreamscape. But you can invite a dreamer to embody a dream character, for example. That's an idea from Gestalt, which really works well with dreams. I find especially like an element that's really, it's hard to understand why it's there. If a person imagines being it or, in entering its subjectivity, then often it will make sense what that dream element is doing.
Yeah, so that shift in perspective, once you enter the dream, it's malleable. And so you're no longer the I that was at first place, but you could be the dog that barked at you or anything else.
Yeah, exactly. And I mean, there are many different theoretical orientations about this. Some people believe that we are every aspect of our dream. And I don't necessarily stick hard and fast to one theory. I really just see what the dream seems to want to say, and invite the person to experience those pieces that seem really important. But the other way that I like to invite people to experience their dream is to go to places that feel unresolved, or dreams will often end in the middle of an action. They're usually, we wake up and something isn't finished. And so you can ask the dreamer to just, okay, go back through the dream, and where it stops, just dream it forward. And very often they'll be able to have the dream continue and to a place that's got more of a resolution than where it ended. And this is particularly, it's a very now very well-established way to treat nightmares, to take the nightmare, and the people will wake up at the scariest part of their dream, and those kind of nightmares repeat. But if you invite someone to continue that dream forward, then I've never had an experience where someone's had that same nightmare again after they've dreamed forward a resolution. It changes the nightmare. Sometimes the nightmare goes away. There's a method called imagery rehearsal therapy, or IRT, that has a lot of empirical evidence that shows it really helps with PTSD symptoms and improving nightmare experiences, reducing distress. So if clinicians do nothing else, they should really consider at least working with nightmares when that's a clinical problem, because they're very treatable and it's not a complicated treatment. It's actually quite simple.
So we're talking about revisiting the dream and, imagining the ending, especially with nightmare. So is there a risk in a nightmare, especially in a traumatic one, that you might be leading the client to re-experience a trauma and to be re-traumatized? Or how do you handle that?
Well, so my take on this, and it's a good question, but my take on this is, if they're having recurring nightmares about their trauma, they're already re-experiencing their trauma. And in fact, I think the reason their nightmares are recurring is because their body is trying to get some form of resolution. And what happens if they really try to avoid paying attention to that, the dreams seem to amp up, they seem to become more frequent. And so you're not really, by not dealing with the nightmare directly, you're not really helping them avoid that. It's better, and this is, there's evidence to show this, it's better to go and talk about it, as difficult as it is, than to leave it. And there's a quote by Jen Lin that I probably won't get the exact words, but he's said something about, just that if you don't talk about it, that doesn't make it go away, and that it doesn't make it worse to talk about it, because you're already enduring this. It's already in your body, this trauma. So you really might want to just be the person that will be willing to keep somebody company in that place where maybe they don't get a chance to talk about it in other places. And I find it's activating, but then what happens when someone feels accompanied by it and say walks through the end of their nightmare towards some form of resolution, that it brings some relief. And so it's short answer, better to talk about it than not.
Yeah. So what you're clearly talking about is that this is not re-experiencing in an unsafe environment, because this is a place where there is the safety of the relationship with the therapist, and where the focus is on, while accompanied, find a way to actually gain some mastery over the dream. So that's it's not the traumatizing circumstances.
Right. Yeah. It's very different from waking up in the middle of the night with your heart pounding and by yourself and being afraid to go to sleep again. This is, yes, obviously employing all of your, good trauma therapy techniques and making sure the person feels accompanied and safe and managing their physiological responses. All of that, yes, is important. But beyond that, it really is about, going into, rather than avoiding, that particular scenario that the dream brings up, because I really believe that the dream is bringing it up repeatedly because it is looking for integration, and the person is to some degree ready for it, and it's very present anyway. So I feel like helping them settle it and come to some resolution is what's called for in that situation.
Yeah. So we're coming back to that notion of entry point, that the dream signals the possibility that there is unfinished business there that the person is already grappling with. And so that's a great entry point into actually dealing with the issue.
Yes. I think that our psyche, or whatever it is that you would say makes our dreams, is actually trying to help us. And not just in terms of our trauma, although the nightmares, recurrent nightmares, refer to a specific trauma that hasn't been integrated. But just in general in life, the dreams, if you unpack them and really understand what they're trying to tell us, they're usually very much what we need at that moment to consider or to metabolize. And so, and I mean, there's different schools of thought. Some people think that dreams are like a nighttime therapist that does their work, whether we work with them or not. It performs some kind of emotional regulation function as we lay down our long-term memories, and it really helps us manage situations that are emotional. And I think that that's true, although no one's really sure. Probably we'll never know for sure what dreams are, where they come from, but that's an aspect of dreams that's really well supported. But then I think beyond that, when you take that dream material and work with it, you can magnify the impact of dreams. You can magnify their helpful aspect because they're pointing to the things that we're grappling with anyway. But if we do it consciously and with company, we might be able to get through and over and understand things much more efficiently than if we just wait for our dreams to do their work.
Yeah. And so in the process of writing your book, you found even more research that you knew about to start with.
Oh, yeah. lots of things. And I've continued my research because I feel like the more information that can be put out there about the science of dreaming and the discoveries of the clinical impact of dreams, the more compelling it is, the evidence that people should spend time in their practice working with dreams. I just found an article recently, which isn't in my book because I'm continuing just researching this track and trying to build a strong case for working with dreams. And it was about nightmares. It was at a conference for the International Association for the Study of Dreams. And someone had done a really excellent study with, I can't remember the number of people, but it was a good quantitative study where they looked at three different nightmare treatments. One was imagery rehearsal therapy. One was an exposure therapy. And the other was just a control condition, find a safe place. And they had four sessions, but there was only one actual treatment session. And at the end of this, they analyzed the results, and everybody got better, even the people that in the control group. After one session, they had significant improvements and reduced their nightmare distress. So it's almost like it doesn't matter what you do, it's helpful. And so I'm finding out things like that and discovering basically all of the information from the dream and sleep researchers that hasn't been really brought into the clinical world very much. They're not cross-fertilizing very much. So I'm trying to do that in my way, just by finding these things that are clinically relevant and putting it out there so that clinicians will go, oh, this is compelling. I really should be working with dreams. My mission.
Yeah. So this seems like a good place to end, but just want to check if you have something else you would want to add.
The other thing I would like to add is I guess just on a personal note, I find the dream work is not only compelling and interesting, but it's very, I think, in terms of doing therapy or even working on your own, own concerns, that dreams are such a fascinating and sort of fun way to work. I find that they bring a creative element and a sort of magical element that makes the whole process sort of much more adventurous. And so I like that about dreams too, that they're really interesting and compelling and kind of fun to work with. And I think clients like that too. They're really happier if the therapy isn't always just about, okay, let's talk about my troubles again. Dreams are, they'll take things off in a really interesting direction a lot of times.
Yeah. So opening up that creative space so that we're not, you know, already we set the tone. It's not just that we're not in a medical model, but we're very much in a creative model.
Yes, exactly. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Thanks, Leslie.
Okay. Thank you, Serge.
This is part of the Relational Implicit podcast. To see more and subscribe to the newsletter, go to relationalimplicit.com.